Suddenly, in the distance, I heard a noise. It was coming from the northbound highway below me. Two people were standing next to a car, waving. "Hey, are you all right?" "Yes," I answered as I started to maneuver toward them, cautiously making my way down that cliff and towards the two strangers. The two turned out to be college students from California who were traveling to Brigham Young University in Provo. One of them had rolled his car. His girlfriend, driving behind him, had stopped. Her car was packed with what seemed like everything they owned, but the driver's seat was clear. The two of them took turns staying warm by trading places in the car. When they saw how frozen I looked, both of them told me to sit down and warm up. I didn't argue. The car was cold, but it was a relief not to be battling the elements. When a snowplow appeared on the highway, the three of us jumped up and down and got it to stop. He had a radio and called for help. I told him my van was on the southbound highway. He called the police and a patrol car met me at my van. The officer walked around the smashed van. "You were in that when it crashed?" he asked. I nodded. "And you're still standing? That must have been one hell of a ride." When I got home, the first thing I did was hold Arthur in my arms. He was now just over a year, and nothing on earth was more precious to me than him. The warmth of his small body against mine began to melt some of my awful fear. It took me more than 24 hours to feel warm again, but I still didn't know about my pregnancy. I hadn't started bleeding, which I thought was a good sign. Maybe, just maybe, the baby had been spared. I went back to school and started studying again. College gave me a focus. The days were fine, but I started having terrible nightmares. I would see the steering wheel spinning out of control and feel the van skidding out from under me. The terror was unshakably alive in me. I made up excuses about why I didn't want to drive. In large families, there is always someone who is willing and eager to drive. I was too traumatized, but no one ever suspected the real reason. There would be times when I had to drive between school and Merrill's house, but they were few and far between. No one knew how hard I had worked for my degree or how much it meant to me. Merrill and my father came to my graduation, but got there late and missed the beginning. I smiled when I walked across the stage to receive my Bachelor of Science degree. Marriage to Merrill had ended my dream of becoming a doctor. He'd never have allowed it. But I was proud that my marriage had not compromised this moment, and I was grateful in the deepest part of my being that my pregnancy had survived the accident. I wasn't sure what the future held. Now that I had my degree, I would have to move back to Colorado City, and for the first time since my marriage, live a day-to-day life as Merrill Jessup's fourth wife. Morning sickness continued to plague me. It finally stopped the day before my daughter was born. Merrill came to her birth. Thankfully, no one else did. She was a beautiful baby. She weighed 7 pounds and was in robust health. I was as exhausted as I was relieved. Merrill was captivated by the baby from the moment he saw her. When she was 3 weeks old, he decided her name would be Betty. It was his favorite name, and he had been waiting to give it to a favorite daughter. It would be years before I realized how exalted Betty's status would be in our family and how it would impact our lives. When she was born on July 2, 1989, I was simply grateful that she was alive and healthy. Now I had a son and a daughter. Arthur had a baby sister. Within my chaotic world, I had an island of love. I was 21 years old. I had been substitute teaching for 4 months when a permanent job opened up teaching 6th grade. The following year, I was transferred to the 2nd grade. There were other, more qualified teachers on the list for openings, but I got it because of Merrill's high standing with the prophet, which was derived from his father's prominence. His father, who was known as Uncle Rich, was the apostle who was next in line to the prophet. I loved finally having my own classroom. It was the one and only place in my life where I was in control of my environment on a daily basis. But I hated leaving my children at home in mediocre care. Merrill's teenage daughters were watching Arthur and Betty, but I knew their hearts weren't in it. Worse still, Merrill's daughters treated my children as second-class citizens, and that upset me. The girls were often belligerent when I asked them something about Betty and Arthur, which increased the anxiety I felt about the overall situation.